So welcome to episode one of whatever this thing's going to be called. By the time
talking
this
shop.
Talking shop, okay, talking shop external. For background for those who are joining for the first time, which is everyone since this hasn't actually been broadcast before, started off with doing an internal podcast in Redify, and there was enough interest externally to do one as well. The internal one's called Talking Shop. Should probably now be called the internal talking shop or talking internal shop or talking internals, except that sounds medical. And then an external one being
talking shop
external or just talking like, shop or just talking shop. There it is. Talking crap potentially as well.
You could be like Nike, just Nike, you know, Nike.
Just Nike. Swoosh.
Swoosh. Just do it.
Just talk. So the voice you can hear in the background is Mr. Scott Barnes, known as Mossy Blog on the webs. Joined Redify not too long ago, former Microsoft evangelist and product manager for a variety of platforms, most notably Silverlight. And we're just going to have a bit of a chat to kick things off. So sit back, relax for the next however many minutes this takes, and hopefully your attention doesn't waver too much. So welcome, Scott.
Thank you.
Since you've already
listened to my seductive voice.
Hello.
1-900.
Anywho. Okay, so the latest thing, you managed to get yourself a little bit controversial all of a sudden, talking about, so for those who have been living under a small rock, Microsoft has probably the worst Windows Mobile phone operating system in the universe. And they've just released or talked about what's coming up for Windows Phone 7 or WinPhone 7. And you've had some thoughts on that. So I suppose let's do the simple thing and just hand it over to you for a little bit and let you talk about what you think.
So I didn't hate it. So it's kind of weird when Microsoft comes with a new product, it's kind of like you either love it or you hate it. That's what typically I find most people put on you. It's like, so you like the new mobile phone? Not really. Oh, you're a hater. It's like, no, I'm just indifferent to it. Like, you know, I'm indifferent to milk. You know, I love it some days and I hate it the other days. So I kind of posted my thoughts on it today on my blog, and it sort of got some, it got picked up by a few places, and they kind of took a few things specifically out of context, or they kind of narrowed in on the juicy parts and left the kind of the body to it alone. You know, where I think one of them said that I thought Windows Mobile is the same as Windows Vista release. In many ways it is. I think the Windows Mobile team had a tough deadline to meet, and they had to sort of, they've had some code resets, I think, from memory. So they really had to sort of dig in deep this time and come up with something, because I think if they hadn't showed up to this World Mobile Conference, whatever it's called, without anything, it would have just been a bloodbath. It would have been literally, potentially, but I think probably Balmer's, you know, last day. In many ways, it's kind of a blessing. But sorry, Mr. B. So it seemed like the bottom line I felt was with the UI was it just seemed flat. It just seemed just one of those user interfaces where you kind of went, yeah, it's okay. Well, I'm not excited about it. I'm not going to write a poem about it. I look at it from a branding standpoint. I think it's, you know, you can do some really interesting things from Microsoft way from the branding, because you've got this kind of tile approach. But, you know, you can have a lot of fun with it. So my point being is with the current iteration, I'm sure you're going to have a lot of fun with it. I'm sure once I get my hands on it, there'll be some fun things we can do with it and it'll be exciting and so on. But I just felt like when the iPhone launched on the market, it just dared the world to sort of treat UX. It really brought UX to the consumer space in a way that I don't think any other technology has ever done that before. It really got... It showed that the consumer is really hungry for that kind of innovation. And so when I kind of looked at Windows Mobile, I just went, you guys didn't even meet the benchmark on that. I think what happens is, I know the team tried to own their own UI. Mm-hmm. They really, really tried to not be an iPhone me too. But I think they went too far to the right on that. I think there's some metaphors inside the iPhone they could have just leveraged and propelled themselves forward on. You know, this whole like Microsoft copies and Apple copies, who gives a crap? In all honest opinion, the only people that care are the ones that kind of are pro Microsoft for pro Apple. And generally speaking, they're a waste of space anyway. So they don't really buy the products. You know, the Apple fanboys aren't going to rush out and buy Windows Mobile. They're always going to be sitting on the sidelines talking about how Microsoft's not as good as Apple and vice versa. So the people that I generally care about are the ones that you know, could have used that kind of metaphor and brought it forward, you know, all those UX principles. So I kind of posted my thoughts on it. I gave it a 7 out of 10. I think Jeremy Tate gave it a 5 out of 10. He's a much harsher grader than I am. I think technically, under the hood, you're going to see a lot of interesting approaches to how products like Silverlight and products like Flash may play a role with the way you put a piece together, with that alluding to what I know versus what Paul knows versus what I shouldn't know versus what I shouldn't say. Who cares? I might just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think going forward, I think the convergence between Zune and I think it's going to be this device that signals where the UX platform across Microsoft is starting to going to sort of converge into one endpoint. And I think with Windows 8 in the future, you'll see the fruits of that labor, hopefully. Depends on if those guys can figure out what they want to be when they grow up. So I just looked at the phone and just went, meh. And apparently a few people took offense to that. A few people said yes, high-fived me and said, this is exactly what I'm thinking. I got got more of that than I did the earlier piece, which is a new change. I just think it's an extension of the Zune, and the Zune's kind of, I'm bored with the Zune. But,
for us in Australia, there's very, very few people who will have a Zune because Microsoft didn't actually think we were a country for quite a few years and didn't realize you could sell them here.
It really had to do with the subscription model. Like, it wasn't so much, I mean, it's two parts though. It was the manufacturing capabilities outside of the US is one point. There's some issues around that. The other part is the Zune subscription model, you know, that only works for the US. You know, the $15 a month, all you can eat, you know, goodness inside the marketplace. To take that across the world, they really have to start signing up a lot more deals and so on. So I don't think, I think it was two parts. I think it was part Microsoft and part just the industry wasn't ready to deal with the subscription model. But for me, I mean, the UI for me, even with the Zune HD, I mean, just looking at the Zune HD, a friend of mine in Corp, he's a very UX-centric guy. This guy just goes on and on about UX and he does it in such a way, it's an insightful way. And he's really good at picking apart things and sort of showing you the true essence of industrial design and user experience. He just kind of looked and said, look, this is pathetic. This is not even cool, which is a very ballsy thing to say inside Corp too. You know, when Zune HD came out, it was kind of the Kool-Aid moment. But I looked at Zune HD and went, it's okay. I think we could have done better. I think we could have nailed it more ways than we let on. Especially with all the Microsoft research that we had going on.
So in terms of consumer market, I mean, with the iPhone dominance and with Android coming out for various devices and everything else, I suppose even though the phone itself looks like, you know, a couple of little sliding tiles and little puzzle we played as kids, it doesn't have anything going for it from what I saw. It's just it feels like it feels like a Me Too.
Well, it's kind of a Me Too. I mean, they have to come at, again, look, I think they come at it from a very conservative approach. I think they really had to stabilize the bleeding first before they could sort of launch themselves beyond that. But it's very pixelated, is the word. It's very pixel.
From a UX perspective, because that's what you're into, obviously. Not obviously, if people don't know you, but you're very much into UX. What are some of the things that you would have liked to have seen in there?
The navigation's kind of weird. It's like left, down, up, right. It's like figuring out the cheat codes for a game. You know, you go, then you keep like seven goes at it and you never can get it right. And you go, there it is. There are certain things like the hub versus a normal menu item. I just kind of looked at that and said, maybe I'll pick it up when I actually pick the device up and play with it. There's no differentiation between, there's no context around the way things are displayed. It's all kind of feels like a banner ad, bunch of banner ads inside the screen and everyone's competing for your attention. Mm-hmm. There's no sort of, you know, I want to say this, in many ways it feels like there's a lot of false affordance with the way it comes together. I just don't feel like it just had depth. I just don't think it had any soul to it. I just think it was very flat. It was a very flat line. The UX was kind of, the capacitive touch where you kind of slide things up and down and so forth. I'm looking for more natural gestures where if I move my fingers in sort of, you know, natural, sort of like a round or a circle, I can kind of wind down into inside the menu system or something, like just something fun, just something innovative. You know, I was looking at that going, okay, well, you did everything whatever else is doing. Cool. All right. That's the best you guys come up with for this iteration. All right.
Then so be it.
So be it. You know, I'm not going to write a poem about it. But you know, that's why I said, meh, you know, okay. I've seen this. The funny thing is like if they had come at this 5 years ago, it by far would have been, you know, the world's best product ever. It would have been the where the iPhone is today, I think. And, you know, it's a symbol of user experience. So I guess maybe I'm kind of falling victim to the where I suddenly feel like the world owes me a better UI.
So it's
Where,
not so much a leap into the future, but a leap into the present.
yeah, it's kind of like, oh, so you finally woke up. Thanks for coming. And I'll be really, really curious to see what Apple does next. I think once, because Apple's kind of very, I mean, I always say Apple's to iPhone as Windows is to Microsoft. You know, all their products revolve around the iPhone right now. So Apple's really, iPhone's the product that everything orbits. So with Windows Mobile 7 sort of really making some aggressive strides towards Apple, it'd be interesting to see how they react and then see how Microsoft reacts to their reaction. So I think the simplicity that they've got today, they stand a much, much, much better position to react, which, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago, I would say they wouldn't have even the slightest chance of reacting to the iPhone. So I think this is a catch-up release. I think it's going to be like Windows Vista, where they're kind of like, oops, here it is. And then a year or two later, you're going to see what the next version is, and they'll throw a price tag, and it's really just a, you know, a patch like Windows 7. I'm really just burning some bridges now, aren't I? Well, you look at
I
the
don't think you're
Windows.
saying anything no one else has said before.
Well, you look at Windows Vista, it says NT 6.0, and then you look at Windows 7, it says NT 6.5 in the CGI string. So there's the clue, you know.
Right.
Sorry.
Moving slightly on before we get into too much trouble. So Apple released the iTampon recently. I mean,
Actually,
I talked about it. They haven't released it, obviously. Do you see other hardware vendors like the Googles or the Microsofts? Not that Google's a hardware vendor, nor Microsoft really, but putting out competing products similar to what the iPad is offering in terms of a target market. So it's not so much the computer, not so much a phone, but just that slate device, I suppose, more than anything else.
I think Microsoft just kind of tipped their hand accidentally with the Courier. I think we'll be seeing interesting stories around what the Courier or the next generation tablet, because Microsoft's always had a tablet. Like, this is not something that they've kind of been asleep. Funny enough, they've always had this, but there's just been too much of, you know, a wuss to bring it to market, where Steve Jobs kind of really, I mean, he put his balls on the line and threw it out there. So I look at the iPad and I kind of look at it and go, you know what, that would suit me because I travel a lot. You know, I like to watch videos. I like to watch, read basic blog posts. I don't really need Flash and Silverlight as much as I want it. I really don't need. I get around that problem quite easy. So for me, it was kind of it's a nice little device for me. But having said that, it really does. The whole locked-in approach with Apple, I think, is really starting to become more and more painfully obvious. And I think more and more people sort of want that border, that garden firewall to be broken down, which in turn is going to create more of a hungry feeding frenzy for whoever comes up with the next concept that touches online, touches with, or gets in touch with what the iPad, funny enough, no pun intended, but gets in touch with the same rhythm that the iPad's hinting towards. So whether it's Google OS, I think stands a great chance of becoming a platform to enable that. But Google's always been this kind of like science project that they keep throwing out to the world and everyone just feels dumb because they can't figure out what it does. Like Buzz, for example. I still can't decode what the hell that does. So I think Google's just got to take their super engineering brainiac type mentality and sort of dumb it down for a little bit and then help the world catch up to their elite brainness. But I think if Microsoft come out with their version of the tablet, I think it'd be like Windows Mobile, where it actually will democratize it. I think giving .NET developers the ability to touch those sort of devices, I think that's where you're really going to see some line of business solutions. I think right now the iPad's very consumer, very niche consumer focused, which Steve Jobs has come out and said it's fine, it's what we're going to do. I think with if Microsoft come out with their version, they will light up the enterprise. There's no hands, there's no doubt in my mind. You know, you'll start seeing, you know, kids actually carry these things to school and actually have some functionality because some random ass .NET shop built blah. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And they can play Wolfenstein on it.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. It's like,
well, not Wolfenstein. I'm aging myself far out. Call of Duty. What am I saying?
Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. It's one thing that these devices have to start figuring out how to tread a very careful line, because up until now, a mobile phone's been limited in its capabilities of entertainment. You know, it's a video and blah, blah, blah. But when these devices start taking more of a games or entertainment capability, get inside the firewall, get inside schools, for example, it's going to be a very, very tough equation for them to deal with, because the biggest fear companies have is all their employees don't do work and they hang out with Facebook, or biggest fear that schools have is the kids aren't paying attention because they're playing a game. So it's going to be a very
games anyway. It's just different kind of games.
Yeah, you know, and they're sending pornographic material, you know, if I had some of the things I had now and I was like 16, boy, you know, you'd be making a lot of friends fast in high school, especially with YouTube the way it is. I mean, I envy kids in many, many ways today. Like, I look at my son and go, it sucks you don't have to go through the baptism fire I went through to get to the point where we are today. And that's the thing, I think we're just getting spoiled now. I think when the iPad comes out, we're like, it doesn't have flash. You know? It's like, 5 years ago, you weren't even coming close to having this concept. Now we owe you something, you know, back off.
And the ebook readers are starting to happen and everything else.
I think we're in a really good stage. I think it's very kind of pioneer mode. I think that's what's pissing the world off in many ways, is that we're all still pioneering and we can't quite figure out which is going to be the mover and the shaker still. And that's, to me, is healthy, because it kind of makes us all think harder about what's coming up next and what's coming up next after that and so on. Hence why I quit Microsoft and I want to get it back out in the field. I want to kind of be at the grassroots level to take hold of this kind of crap.
Get your hands dirty.
Yeah.
All right. So one other thing I noticed you blogged on recently is user experience and agile and how they fit together. So my personal background, I'm a certified Scrum practitioner. I've been doing Scrum and Agile in various forms for probably 5 years now. So I've got a little bit of water under the bridge, so to speak. And
bit of a waterfall under the bridge.
Yeah, boom, boom. Dealing with user experience has always been a bit of a challenge at times, because without saying designer types and trying to put them in a box or anything like that, but those who've got to do the visuals tend to have a different flow from developers.
Yeah, because see, thing I liked about Agile in many ways is the kind of the time boxing. The time boxing really makes you stop procrastinating. It really says, look, I haven't got time, get the stuff done, let's get it done, and we'll come back to it next. And we'll come, you know, if we can't get it done in this sprint, we'll put it on the to-do list. If it's too complex or too much of a, you know, a time sink for us, we'll push it back till we're learning for it done first and that kind of stuff. It really makes you think about the anatomy of what the software needs to happen and when it needs to happen and how it needs to happen. The problem I see, there's two parts. There's a user experience designer and then there's a UI designer. Now, the differentiation between them both, if you can find one that does both, keep them, you know, marry them, you know, send them money, lock them down, because it's pretty rare. The user experience person typically doesn't even know how to push the pixels. They probably don't even know how to open up Photoshop and do design. So the user experience people can kind of, their brains are wired differently. They look at a user interface and they can start pulling out the principles of design, you know, start talking about things from cognitive science. They go, oh, do you know that's Fitts' law and how Fitts' law works? It does blah, blah, blah. And those type of guys, they can kind of help you map out what to do per iteration or per sprint. And the UI designers can sit there and, you know, push the pixels together to actually make it look like it's gloss and put the gloss on the UI. But two things wrong with that. First of all, the UI designer, designing user interface is kind of one of those things where you're either in the mood or you're not. In many ways, I like to say it's like sex. You're either in the mood or you're not. There's no kind of hot or cold. There's no gray area. It's kind of hot or cold. So sometimes you just kind of hit this wall where you can't design, but the time crunch is on. So it's really hard to put time on some quality design sometimes. The other part from user experience is, you know, all you're doing is reacting to the problem on each iteration. So looking at identifying what's coming up next, saying, right, well, we did this over here, and now I need to make this kind of fit into there. Okay, I quickly assemble pieces like a game of Tetris, and then I kind of go, okay, I think that's right. Let's just lock that in, go build. Which is kind of it works. Like, I think it'll work. But I think you, as a team, need to sort of set up one sprint, one dedicated sprint to say, look, when we get to sprint 5, let's hit the pause button and let's refactor the UI, which means it's going to have some impact how you engineered it. But mm-hmm. let's go back and refactor the UI. And the UI will dictate what the engineering excellence needs to do next. And I don't think teams are geared for that. I think it's one of the things where, well, we had a UX guy in the room and he said blah, and we're going to take him his word. And if he's lying, then, you know, he butts on the line. But in many ways, you're not really getting the benefits out of UX. You're really getting the benefits out of UI. You're not getting the benefits of user experience. And I think the UX needs to have its own kind of a reset moment where you kind of unravel everything that you kind of stuck together with duct tape and string and say, right, well, here's some lessons we've learned along the way. Here's how we refactor it. Here's how we make some changes. Here's how we can simplify that. And I think you probably get some more performance increases out of that as well.
So one of the things with teams doing any form of agile is that there's this sense of whole team ownership. And UX would typically be part of just another deliverable, same as, you know, it's just an element of quality if you get right down to the nub of it. Same as working code, same as, you know, things spelt correctly on the screen and all that sort
to
of thing.
To a point.
I suppose the question is there a way for other team members to pick up UX skills or to at least know the basics of what makes good UX? Because I know most developers are, if they're anything like me, are really crap at putting together something that looks good. And if they can't make it look good, there's this tendency to think, well, then the UX is kind of irrelevant. It's UI first and then UX, if that makes sense. Is it just we as developers have it the wrong way around?
Yeah, it's really UX first and UI. Because once you settle on what the expected UI framing, you know, you're dealing with a vanilla canvas. You don't really focus on the high fidelity. You're just sort of saying, you know, if I assemble these pieces here and here, okay, that's kind of how the structure or the flow or the way the human's going to interact with this. Okay, designer, come over and actually start texturizing and start tattooing your visuals on top of this concept that I've come up with, you know. For example, the ribbon menu when it was first built, you know, the guys actually had like this, you know, kind of a very vanilla UI, and the icons weren't even decided, they were just orange dots, you know, as they were building them. So as they're building the navigation, the framework, there's some basic UI and then some designers are off there, you know, figuring out what icons go where and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like an assembly set. I don't know. It's a tough question because, you know, the correct answer or the most politically correct answer is saying, sure, let's all have a commune around UX. We all share and nurture and love the responsibility of all sharing each other's, you know, workload, and let's all hold hands and sing kumbaya. But the reality is, you know, it's the same as, would you let a designer touch your database? And the answer is probably no, because sure, he can add data into a record, but does he know RDMS? Does he know, you know, what a data cube actually is and how it kind of plays a role with development? So there's only certain limitations where you really have to look at it cold, from the cold hard light of the day and say, you just don't have the skill set, period. So until you have a skill set, I'm probably going to have to ask you to step away, you know. I like to think of sometimes where the team should be structured in many ways like an airport where, you know, the two guys flying the plane, land the plane, they park it. And then
oh, good. I thought you were going to talk about rubber gloves for a minute there.
Ooh, that too, you know, turn and cough. The guys park the plane, the two pilots park the plane. But now, they don't sit down and watch the baggage carriers take the bags off. You know, they trust that they can figure that out for themselves. But if push came to shove, I'm sure, you know, a pilot could come down from his seat and actually hand, you know, work those guys to put bags inside a carousel. The point being is, you know, just everyone has their place in the team, and it's if you want to cross skill share, if you want to start collaborating with one another, and you know, if a developer wants to learn UX, then fine. That's where it's kind of like you have a mentoring and a student approach to things. But having engineers sort of, you know, argue with the UX guy saying, no, I don't think that should work. I think you should do blah. It's kind of like, well, I don't think you should code that way. I think you should drop C# and go Java. You know, at what point in time do you find out, what point in time does the balance of power suddenly shift towards? And the reason I say this, and I'll stop there, but the reason I'm going to get beaten up by all these Scrum guys and all these Agile guys in the community, but the thing I've noticed inside Microsoft the most from an engineering side of things is engineers just beat the shit out of the UX guys a lot. They kind of say, nah, can't do that. It's going to cost. It's going to time and money there. Let's go back to the trees and data grids. And it's kind of one of those situations where you look at it sometimes unfold and you go, the reason why these UX guys can never win those arguments is because once you throw down that time and cost argument down the table, it's very hard to, you know, beat that, because someone forgot to tell the world that user experience actually costs money. So it's a tax you have to pay in order to leap forward. Because when you do data grids and trees, those metaphors or those concepts have already been decided upon. That's a pattern that everyone's kind of agreed upon. It's now got to the point where it's probably abused too much and it's probably taken out of context of what it's really stood for. But it's this thing now we've all gravitated towards. And when you try and inject new...
Is that also because of things like the Windows design guidelines, for instance?
Yeah, I mean, you got to take a step back. You know, by the way, FYI to the world, Microsoft got it wrong. That's why WPF and Silverlight exist. So it's a big FYI. You know, the old days of WinForms were great. The problem was that everyone was assembling some really, really weird UI and really complex UI. And it got to the point where those of them in the community decided to turn around and say, when they say, look, you know, how about we customize this? How about we make this more simple? How about we bring it up to speed with where the world's heading in terms of user experience? And WinForms was not able to do that. I mean, you really had to know how GDI worked really under the hood, like the back of your hand, to make that work. So going forward, you've got this new paradigm shift. And as a result of that, I see a lot of the old coming into the new. And that's, I think, it's polluting the well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I know from a Silverlight standpoint, when we didn't have data grids, it kind of freaked everyone out. They're like, oh, I'm not touching Silverlight plus a data grid. I'm like, that's the point, you know. I banned you from having a data grid.
I think that was a great move, by the way.
Yeah, like, what's your next move, champ? You know, what are you going to do next? And that's where I kind of come back to that whole, you know, who crosses, you know, whose path, you know, in an agile sort of environment. Sometimes you really just have to have faith in the guy that has his experience above his head and say, all right, well, this is going to cost us more cycles and time, but you seem like you have a vision here. You seem like this is going to be something that is going to make the end user's life easier, which is the whole point we build software. So I'm going to trust you to hold that fort. It works. I think it works if you respect the roles. If you get to a situation where the engineer guys are just lazy and they don't want to do extra work and they kind of steamroll the designer or the UX guy, then it kind of feels like it's a false democracy, if you will.
Well, then you've probably got some team dysfunction in any case, right?
Well, the teams engineering-wise, you know, the guys can be very clicky, they know each other really well, and they know, you know, bad code from good code, because it's almost like a science there. There's always, you can spot bad code pretty easily. You can say, what the hell are you smoking when you wrote this?
And then you realize it was your code.
My code didn't come out like that, definitely. but, you know, Resharp was even telling you, what are you smoking? So with UX, you don't really have that kind of buddy system where it's kind of like I think you're really out there alone and you don't have any friends. So,
you know, you're out there all alone with no friends. Yeah,
all alone. the guitar. So it's kind of one of those situations where you really have to have the team embrace the concept user experience wholeheartedly. They kind of almost get religious about it first, I've seen this happen as an Avengers. I watched it so many times where the team just steamrolled the crap out of the UX guy. It was just the vocal minority was just getting slammed every step of the way. So that's where I kind of like call a foul and say, well, it depends is my end answer for that.
Like everything else in IT, it depends.
Well, Microsoft classic answer is ASP.NET MVC versus web forms.
It depends. C-sharp versus VB. It depends.
Well, VB is just this kind of sick joke that...
Don't start. Don't start. Resist the urge.
VB just die. Stop what you're doing. You're wasting your life. End it now.
You've just upset a whole lot of people and probably at the same time made a whole lot of people very happy.
Well, I seem to say the VB, and I can say this now, no longer Microsoft. Hey, VB guys, we have a thing called opposable thumbs. Learn how to use them.
What dear idea. I won't tell you that I programmed VB for many years.
I had a choice between VB and Delphi. I went with Delphi. And then I went from Delphi to Java, and then Java mixed in with ColdFusion, and then went to Adobe products, and then went to Microsoft products. So I've had a good, I've touched base with a lot of technology, and I can simply say VB, what I just can't.
Excellent. All right. With that disparaging remarks at the end and all.
Some alienated the UX guys, the Windows Mobile team, the Windows 7 team.
With that, we might call this a wrap for this particular podcast. And
sure.
Thanks for helping me launch this sucker.
It's Talking Shop.
It's Talking Shop, see? Just like that, Talking Shop Down Under, just in case there's another Talking Shop podcast somewhere.
And you have to get around at the end to say, I endorse this message.
Well, actually, no, what we have to say is that the views we express are not necessarily those of our employer. And should you take any action or otherwise based on anything we say and kill someone, then we take no responsibility.
I will hunt you down and kill you. Sorry, what? I will hunt you down, track you down, and make you eat those words.
All right, so if you're in the audience and you managed to make it all the way to the end of this, then well done. Kudos to you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll see you next time on Talking Shop Down Under.